May 17th. Almost morning and I can't fall asleep. I've got to understand what happened to me last night at the concert. The evening started out well enough. The mall at Central Park had filled up early, and Alice and I had to pick our way among the couples stretched out on the grass. Finally, far back from the path, we found an unused tree where, out of the range of lamplight, the only evidence of other couples was the protesting female laughter and the glow of lit cigarettes. "This will be fine," she said. "No reason to be right on top of the orchestra." "What's that they're playing now?" I asked. "Debussy's La Mer. Do you like it?" I settled down beside her. "I don't know much about this kind of music. I have to think about it." "Don't think about it," she whispered. "Feel it. Let it sweep over you like the sea without trying to understand." She lay back on the grass and turned her face in the direction of the music. I had no way of knowing what she expected of me. This was far from the clear lines of problem-solving and the systematic acquisition of knowledge. I kept telling myself that the sweating palms, the tightness in my chest, the desire to put my arms around her were merely biochemical reactions. I even traced the pattern of stimulus and reaction that caused my nervousness and excitement. Yet everything was fuzzy and uncertain. Should I put my arm around her or not? Was she waiting for me to do it? Would she get angry? I could tell I was still behaving like an adolescent, and it angered me. "Here," I choked, "why don't you make yourself more comfortable? Rest on my shoulder." She let me put my arm around her, but she didn't look at me. She seemed to be too absorbed in the music to realize what I was doing. Did she want me to hold her that way, or was she merely tolerating it? As I slipped my arm down to her waist, I felt her tremble, but still, she kept staring in the direction of the orchestra. She was pretending to be concentrating on the music so that she wouldn't have to respond to me. She didn't want to know what was happening. As long as she looked away and listened, she could pretend that my closeness, my arms around her, were without her knowledge or consent. She wanted me to make love to her body while she kept her mind on higher things. I reached over roughly and turned her chin. "Why don't you look at me? Are you pretending I don't exist?" "No, Charlie," she whispered. "I'm pretending I don't exist." When I touched her shoulder, she stiffened and trembled, but I pulled her toward me. Then it happened. It started as a hollow buzzing in my ears, an electric saw far away. Then the cold, arms and legs prickly, and finger numbing. Suddenly, I had the feeling I was being watched. A sharp switch in perception. I saw, from some point in the darkness behind a tree, the two of us lying in each other's arms. I looked up to see a boy of 15 or 16 crouching nearby. "Hey!" I shouted. As he stood up, I saw his trousers were open and he was exposed. "What's the matter?" she gasped. I jumped up, and he vanished into the darkness. "Did you see him?" "No," she said, smoothing her skirt nervously. "I didn't see anyone." "Standing right here, watching us, close enough to touch you." "Charlie, where are you going?" He couldn't have gotten very far. "Leave him alone, Charlie. It doesn't matter." But it mattered to me. I ran into the darkness, stumbling over startled couples, but there was no way to tell where he had gone. The more I thought about him, the worse became the queasy feeling that comes before fainting. Lost and alone in a great wilderness. And then I caught hold of myself and found my way back to where Alice was sitting.
"Did you find him?"
"No, but he was there. I saw him." She looked at me strangely.
"Are you all right?"
"I will be, in a minute. Just that damn buzzing in my ears."
Maybe we'd better go.